Hello, I'm Kate Chauviré, and welcome to the SetUp Leadership and Safety Podcast, Driving Sustainable Safety Performance. Based in France and operating internationally, SetUp is a global executive education club where minds meet, grow, and succeed together. We are a collaborative learning community of leading international organizations from diverse and non-competitive industries. Rooted in the real world and driven by the real-life challenges of our community, we co-create leadership development programs with innovative, highly relevant, and actionable learning. For over a decade, we have worked with our members to develop and strengthen the leadership elements required for a strong and sustainable safety culture. As organizations struggle to compete in a more complex and fast-paced world, forward-thinking leaders agree that the greatest impact on overall performance is achieved by caring for their people. Leaders who invest in safety programs and develop a culture of care inspire greater motivation, create happy and engaged teams, and boost productivity. So what could be more important than taking care of the most valuable asset in your business, the people who work in it? We hope this safety podcast will help move the needle yet a bit closer to getting to zero. This is the second episode in a series of five podcasts with Xavier Bontemps, international HSE leader with over 35 years energy industry leadership experience, gained from senior roles at BP, Ineos and Total, and most recently as Total Energy's corporate HSE director. In this podcast series, we'll explore how leaders can drive sustainable safety performance to help protect lives, assets and the environment. Xavier will share his insightful real-life experiences, safety challenges, and best practice solutions. In the second episode, we'll explore how do you sense if your organization is going blind on safety. So welcome once again to the SetUp podcast, Xavier. And with over 35 years leadership experience working for global energy companies, how do you sense if your organization is going blind on safety?
Bonjour, Kate. I've personally lived large company acquisitions and mergers in my career. BP acquired Amoco, Arco, Veba, or even Castrol, becoming a first league oil and gas player. Total bought Fina and then Elf and equally joined the club. I see acquisitions creating a lot of enthusiasm, but equally a lot of introspection, staff rotations, merging of teams and redefinition of processes and organizations. And I'm certain many auditors see the same. But with time, habits creep in, arrogance grows with the company size, standardizations are the norm, routines settle in, and efforts to listen to stakeholders wane. This drift creates a certain self-sufficiency and partial organizational blindness by a loss of perspective. Well, you see, Kate, the same occurs with safety. We get comfortable with risks. Shortcuts are taken. Rules are multiplied and dilute rigor. Complexity settles in as companies grow. Competencies sag because of repeated staff rotations. And computers replace field presence. Complacency settles in, which means potentially organizational blindness.
So why is organizational blindness such a big issue when it comes to safety?
Well, Kate, in today's podcast, I will give three big examples and three practical recommendations. You see, I've lived in the vicinity of the causes and consequences of three disasters in the oil and gas sector. The BP upstream Gulf of Mexico blowout and pollution. The BP midstream Texas City refinery explosion. And the downstream Total joint venture with a UK depot explosion and fire. You see, the root cause categories are similar, and the origins can be found in organizational blindness. And the consequences are devastating and go well beyond any imagination. This is because we rarely witness the energy content of the products we make and use in everyday life. And the consequences, well, they drive change in legislation. But they do bind together industrial operators. They change organizations and mature process safety culture. They are quite profound to understand and to follow. So for me, the initial prevention of safety blindness, the ability to stay alert, the avoidance of complacency, the capability of zooming in and out continuously on operations need certain best practices reinforced by strong leadership.
So Texas City, Buntsfield, and Macondo have been extensively investigated. You say that the root causes are similar. Can you elaborate first with Texas City?
Yes. On March 23, 2005, a BP Texan refining unit was starting up after a long maintenance shutdown. A very tall column, 55 meters, was overfilled with hot gasoline and raffinate. The hot fluids then fed an open atmospheric vent, and a big hot vapor cloud then spread to neighboring contractor trailers, where the cloud ignited from a vehicle with an engine running. It was the worst industrial U.S. accident in the last 15 years. The explosion killed 15 contractors and costed BP its reputation and billions of dollars. And I saw that many BP employees in Texas would be cursed in public for many years. But the U.S. Chemical Safety Board did a great job in terms of investigation. And the simultaneous failure of four safety barriers caused this tragedy. The first being a partial risk awareness. Technically, there were two level instruments and their alarms that did not work during the startup, whereas the shift team thought they were okay. But more profoundly, the risk awareness was partial because the boardman on shift had been working for 30 consecutive days. He was alone. He was following three refining units, one of which this one was starting up. A colleague boardman position had been eliminated a year prior following a cost-cutting program. He was a bit blindsided. A second failure is the underestimation of process safety hazards. The design of the plant was certainly very good, of high quality in terms of excessive fluid prevention and temperatures, but the venting of released hydrocarbons was under-designed and not sent to a flare system. A third failure is the lack of competency and the lack of a single point of accountability, because plant supervision arrived late and left early. And the startup procedure stayed in the control room cupboards versus being ticked off by the boardman, because the shift teams thought that it was impractical, inappropriate. And the last failure was the inability to trip. There was no lead supervisor present during the column filling, and nobody was pulling the plug.
But how did corporate BP react thereafter?
Well, indeed, as always, there's a bigger story, and I saw some of it. On the day following the tragedy, my refining senior vice president gathered all of us, all refinery managers, on the phone. We put the question to him, "Mike, what should we now do?" And Mike answered, "Stop whatever you're doing, sit in one of your control rooms for 24 hours and just watch." He was telling us that we as management had gone blind. And actually, BP CEO at the time was set to conclude that his reporting levels, N-1 and N-2s, had never been directly in charge of production facility plants, and hence, if they could listen, they did not hear resistance or arguments to continuous cost-cutting instructions. At the end of the day, what I'd say is the plant units that I have seen perform the safest and the best in my career are those where their plant superintendents spend half their time at least in the control rooms, and often next to control room boardmen. My conviction is that leadership field presence is a fundamental condition, if not sufficient, for safety.
So what about Bunsfield? What happened there?
Kate, on December 11th, 2005, the Bunsfield Oil Storage Depot at Hemel Hempstead blew up after ignition of a vapor cloud explosion where petrol ignited. During a pipeline gasoline transfer, a tank overflowed in the middle of night for many hours and the vapor ignited. There were no injuries, but it was the worst post-war event known in the UK. And again, there are failures in terms of partial risk awareness and standardization of shortcuts. Technically, the tank's primary level controller was unreliable, and it had been known to have been unreliable and stuck during operation a dozen times in the previous years. So the two major causes were the absence of an effective fault logging process and the lack of a maintenance regime that could reliably respond to these faults. At the time, I knew the depot manager and I asked him, "Didier, if you had one silver bullet in terms of prevention to shoot, which one would you pick?" And his answer was, "Xavier, I would have required a daily report on my desk of any new bypass of critical safety interlocks so that I could react." Didier was telling me that he had been blind. Again, my takeaway, Kate, is at the end of the day, the plants that I have seen operate the safest and the most reliable have their first-line leaders and their union representatives listened to regularly and carefully by line management to distinguish what's essential and what is anecdotal.
And I imagine you'll be saying that Macondo's leadership equally suffered from partial awareness and shortcuts.
Indeed, Kate. On April 20th, 2010, Deepwater Horizon blew up. an oil and gas blowout ignited. 11 lives perished. The Gulf of Mexico environmental pollution costed BP its reputation and a minimum of $44 billion. And again, the simultaneous failure of four safety barriers caused this tragedy. Again, the first failure around partial risk awareness. You see, the first barrier was a well cement job, which means that the rig having hit deep Gulf of Mexico oil was to retire. To do so, it had to cement the seabed bottom piping. But the well cement testing was incomplete because what was checked out was only one of four possible inventoried failure mechanisms. Financial pressure of the project's overrun and the false comfort that there was subsequent barriers to be tested resulted in declaring this first stage as being successful, even if partial. The second failure, again, is a lack of competency and the lack of a single point of accountability. Because instrumentation failure indications were dismissed as no one saw a sufficient reason to speak up. The integrity test was passed by lack of competency, lack of a single point of accountability, and with the qualification of the earlier success. A third failure is the standardization again of shortcuts. The well monitoring test of injected and released fluids, this is mud and seawater that has to be checked in terms of checking the mass balance, this was not pursued. Why? Because the two prior tests had been falsely declared successful. The fourth failure is because of the inability to trip the operation. If you like, the fourth barrier, the blowout preventer in this jargon, is the equipment that is designed to be activated early during a blowout phase, during the monitoring phase, not when you have oil and gas gushing out. So it cannot clamp shut the seafloor bed piping.
So to summarize, what are the common root causes of these tragedies?
So in summary, Kate, there are commonalities between these three events, which I've stated. But at the end of the day, the technical and operational practice was substandard. The representation of the situation was muddled. And as a result, the ability of management to decide was impaired. But I've seen that yesterday's solutions remain in place today. From a condo, staff certification, independent watchdogs, and audits are still very much practiced. For Texas City, we've seen many cases of sign-offs, redundancy of starter controls, many checklists. And following Bunsfield, many reliable independent technical barriers have been implemented. Bypass are alerted, and many audits confirm this. And in essence, these solutions have to do with competent field authority, rigorous protocols, organizational methods, which means, again, leadership.
And are there practical ways of increasing risk awareness, developing safety competencies, detecting shortcuts, which you would call safety blindness?
Yes, let's talk about the three recommendations and best practices that I've seen implemented successfully. First, increasing awareness of risk. You know, how many times have you heard the expression, Kate, the blind leading the blind? Now, enhanced awareness is possible when, for example, expert peers can visit and are listened to, when there is humility to welcome audits, and when there is curiosity and understanding new courses of prevention. I like one practice that combines these three, which is a joint safety tour between two field managers, one of which is a contractor. The joint safety tour observes field work and conditions. It solicits upward feedback. The tour asks open questions. It shares and compares experiences of two managers who cannot walk away without consolidating a judgment and suggesting improvements.
Why a safety tour?
Well, the hard facts. In my last company, back in 2019, I polled 2,300 field workers that included 30% contractors. And this survey was designed to understand how workers prioritize risk and prevention methods. One key finding was that 40% indicated that their manager conducted a safety tour every 3 months at best, meaning that there was seldom an opportunity to be heard on matters directly linked to safety.
And why a joint safety tour with a contractor?
Well, let's place ourselves in the shoes of our contractors. Again, they compare us with our direct competitors. They see the internal workings of a company and hence the malfunctions, and very often better than ourselves. And they innovate to survive in tough competition. They know that safety is a condition of employment. So in essence, they have a strong safety stake and have a lot of insights to offer, if allowed. The joint safety tour helps to avoid selective risk awareness and blindsighting.
But all of us are at least aware of certain risks, like speeding in a car, for example.
Yes, each of us tolerates risk through habit or from accepting work condition or because of the positive emotion of benefiting from some form of advantage, for example, saving time. Each of us tolerates risk because we don't measure the consequence of that risk turning into a hazard. And usually there will be some discomfort initially in doing so. But as you know, complacency develops with routine. And that initial risk perceived gets buried in our minds given the absence of a consequence. One practical approach I've promoted and use is called life-saving checks. It combines these features. These are simple field audits of hazardous work, usually concentrating on a few categories of high risk, for example, working at height or working on an electrical system. In doing so, a company can capture a lot of fatal causes in terms of past events.
So why checks then?
Again, the same poll helped me. 50% of those workers stated that they were not controlled on a daily basis. Auditors, ask yourselves within your company, how often is compliance of your life-saving rules measured and especially openly published? Auditors, think and imagine the discussions your company could have if partial compliance of essential rules was routinely published. Imagine the impact.
And why life-saving?
Because these type of checks are accepted by the majority of workers in their own interest. And we do so, in total, using graphical drawings of safeguards, which makes it easier for workers to understand versus using a written procedure or a routine checklist. Life-saving checks help to address a lack of competency on key risks or the habit of certain shortcuts.
But do all workers actually speak up when they perceive a risk, which they're not willing to take?
No, and this is when the ability to speak up is dominated by the uncertainty of consequence. You know the expression, I'm afraid to stick my neck out? Using that same 2019 company poll, we established that 20% of workers did not stop work for safety reasons in the last semester, and actually 5% were individually scared working safely with their work permit. And as you know, very few spoke up without fear of hierarchy, colleagues, or sounding like a fool. So if I had to choose one best practice, I would recommend the safety green lights. Also called in the business last-minute risk assessment, take five, etc. But in a way where open questions are an invitation to speak up. In other terms, is it safe to start? Do I know how I'm practically going to do this job? It's a very short toolbox session and works best if the local team leader understands the intent and uses his own language. The ability to speak up and be heard enlightens blindness. Again, we should really relish those freshly born eyes.
So what are the key takeaways from today's conversation?
Well, the takeaways, the causes of Texas City, Bunsfield, and Macondo are not technology specific, and the root causes are actually quite similar. The solutions developed call on competent authority present in the field, vital field checks that are communicated and used, and enabling workers to speak up before it's too late. And it falls on leadership to enact best practices that enlighten safety blindness, that share experience when observing work, that measure and communicate compliance to essential rules, and that enable speak up before it gets too late. These best practices require leadership, but equally capable HSC professionals that need to be knowledgeable, courageous mirrors, and leadership coaches. But that, Kate, is a topic of another podcast.
Thank you, Xavier. This is the end of today's episode, and we look forward to next time, where we'll be discussing how do you know if your HSE professionals are performing well. Xavier Bontemps is an international HSE leader and safety professional with over 35 years energy industry leadership experience gained from senior roles at BP, INEOS and Total, and most recently as Total Energy's corporate HSE director for over 3 years. The leadership themes discussed in this podcast are explored in detail during SEDEP's flagship Leadership and Safety Culture Programme, Levels 1 and 2, co-created by L'Oréal and Sanofi, and in SEDEP's Safety Leadership Academy programme, jointly created with SPE for the oil and gas industry and endorsed by the IOGP. These inspiring learning journeys are designed to help participants rise to the many challenges involved in creating a healthier, more engaged and effective workforce, and examine how our pandemic world has changed workplace health and safety expectations and needs. Our programs enable H&S leaders from all industries and sectors to rethink their roles and develop the skills and tools necessary to embrace our new world. Our Safety Leadership Academy is specifically focused on developing leadership capabilities within the oil and gas industry to shift paradigms and make zero accidents a reality. You can find out more about these programs on our website at www.sedep.fr. Thanks again, Xavier, and until next time.